Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, real quick, folks. By the way, welcome back to Today's Issues. Today's Issues is the name of this show on the American Family Radio Network. Thanks for listening to AFR. We got some tours lined up for the year that I wanted to tell you about real quick. If you want to go with us, we'd love to have you. We got a Colonial, Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown. That's in June and September. And that's back-to-back with our Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon tours. So you can do one or the other, or you can want to stay with us Saturday to Saturday. You can spend the whole week with us. We'll take care of you. And all you got to do is get to these places. Get to Washington, D.C. for the Williamsburg tour. We meet at the airport there in D.C., and we drive down. We bus down. So that's in June and September. Those tours are halfway to two-thirds full. So, but it's a lot of fun, and people like you who listen to AFR from all over the country will be on those tours. Also, Stephen McDowell, the president of the Providence Foundation, a real historian, will be with us on the tours to talk and give commentary all along the way. The story Stephen tells is fascinating. He's like a walking encyclopedia of American history. And then in October, we got a brand new tour that Wesley and Walker are doing. Allison, my wife, and I, we're going. Stephen McDowell and his wife's going. Tim Barton from Wall Builders, we're all going on this tour of Boston in the greater Boston area, Ed's old stomping ground. So it's going to be a new trip for us, but we got so many fun things planned and interesting things planned during that week in Boston. That's in October. That we got like 75 people now signed up for that one, and well, like 100 seats available. So you can see we'll be filling up that one pretty quick. So one other thing, and we'll be talking about this more, but we set the itinerary for March of next year. Like a year from now, there's going to be two tours. One is Israel. That's our annual trip to the Holy Land in March, and then back-to-back with that is the Footsteps of Paul tour that Wesley and Walker are leading. So you can do both of those back-to-back if you want to, or you can do one or the other.
Yep. That sounds amazing.
Yeah, it's Footsteps of Paul. A lot of time in Greece, the Footsteps of Paul. If you want to read about any of what I just said, all the information is at the website I'm about to give you, wildmongroup.com. Right, Wesley?
That's right. Yep.
Wildmongroup.com.
wildmongroup.com. The DC tour, the Williamsburg tour, the Boston tour, and then the 2026 March trips to Israel and Greece are Footsteps of Paul. Everything, the itinerary, everything you need to know, the pricing, everything is available at that website, wildmongroup.com. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning. Just sit right back and you'll hear a tale of a faithful trip.
Oh, well, talking about our tours?
Oh, yes. Yeah. 3 hours. So,
That's a good selling point, Steve.
I don't think we're not planning on being castaways.
Well, I hope not.
On a Greek island somewhere. All right. So Tim, Ed, Wesley, and now Steve Paisley Jordahl joins us.
Good morning.
Good morning, Brother Steve. What is your first story?
Well, I heard you talking earlier about a certain Rosie O'Donnell who went off to Ireland.
Well, she went off, all right. Off the rails.
President Trump is actually speaking into this. I'd like to let you hear what he has to say.
This is what I don't like. This is bad Trump, usually. But go ahead.
Well, cut 16.
My fellow Americans, this is the greatest achievement of my administration to date. Rosie O'Donnell has deported herself out of the United States of America. She moved to Ireland. So much for luck of the Irish. That's a lot of bad luck when you look at it. Quite frankly, the worst luck the world has ever seen. But I just got off the phone with Ireland, and they said to me, "Sir, Rosie O'Donnell is now in our country. What do we do, sir?" I said, "You have to keep her." They said, "But, sir, she's going to cause another famine." I said, "That's your problem now. You have to keep her. Don't you dare send her back. If you send her back, I'm going to hit you with 4,000% tariffs if you send her back. We're not going to let it happen.
Who was that? That wasn't really Trump. That sounded just like him. Who was that?
That was Sean Farage, who's a Trump impersonator or conservative blogger or podcaster.
That's a guy who, when President Trump got elected in November, said, "Happy days are here again."
Yes.
Because now he could have continued doing the Trump imitation, but with 4 years of Trump, God willing.
So you're going to fit a 4,000% tariff if you try to send her back, huh?
And seriously, this is really the truth. Do you know who's in Ireland today besides
Marco Rubio, right?
Marco Rubio, on behalf of the president. President Trump is sending...
He's trying to secure a deal that they keep Rosie O'Donnell no matter what happens.
That might be why he's there, but Trump is following Rosie over to Ireland.
Ireland.
I didn't understand the crack about she's going to cause a famine.
I don't know.
Could you explain that?
There's a long history there.
Yeah, I know.
Between Trump and Rosie O'Donnell.
Yeah.
And Trump prevailed.
Yeah.
Well, hey, listen, I hope, like the Pied Piper, that many Hollywood stars follow her out.
Mm, yep. So far, none that I have heard of, but you never know.
They just blowhards. If Trump gets elected, I'm leaving, and then they never do.
No. You know why?
Why?
Because this country rocks.
Right. Duly noted. All right, Steve, next story.
All right. To say that we dodged a bullet when... we elected Donald Trump. He literally dodged a bullet, but the country did too. I want to play you a tale that Speaker Johnson told of a meeting he had with Donald Trump.
With Joe Biden.
I'm sorry, with Joe Biden. Yeah, my bad.
It's a big difference.
Yeah, it is a big difference. Yeah. Speaker Johnson had this meeting with Joe Biden, and this is a little longer cut. It's about 2.5 minutes, but I think it's worth the time to listen to what was going on in the White House, cut 11.
January a year ago, almost exactly a year ago, I became Speaker in October 2023, and there were all sorts of big national security concerns and everything going on, and I started requesting a meeting with the president because, you know, I'm kind of old school. I'm a constitutional law guy. Speaker of the House should be able to talk to the president, especially in times of great national interest and calamity. But they wouldn't let me meet with him, and his staff kept getting excuses. This went on for like 8 or 9 weeks. I'm sorry, Mr. Speaker, he doesn't have time. What are you talking about? I'm second in line of the presidency. He has time. I need to talk to him. I can't say the classified parts, but we had some big, big national concerns at the time that I was losing sleep over. Finally, I just went to the Hill Press Corps and I said, the president is not being allowed to meet with the speaker. There's a problem. So they started putting pressure on him.
Long story short,
they finally relented. They invited me to the White House. I show up and I realize it's actually an ambush because it's not just me and the president. It's also Kamala Harris, Chuck Schumer, Hakeem, you know, the CIA director, everybody. And then so I walked in the Oval and, I know what this is. This is they're going to hotbox the speaker on Ukraine funding. That's what it was. This is probably third week of January. We sit down, we're in the midst of it, and the whole conversation, and I'm going, we don't need to have this conversation. The president reaches over just like this. We're sitting right next to the fireplace in the Oval, and he grabs my arm and he says, the speaker and I just need a couple minutes together. Would y'all just leave us alone? And I looked up on the faces of some of the staff standing around the wall, and they're like, no, he did it. So he called it. He's the commander in chief. So everybody leaves, and he and I are standing awkwardly in the middle of the Oval Office right over the rug by that coffee table. And I said, Mr. President, thanks for the moments. This is very important. I got some big national security things I need to talk to you about that I've heard and I think you know, and what do we do? But first, real quickly, Mr. President, can I ask you a question? I cannot answer this from my constituents in Louisiana. Sir, why did you pause LNG exports to Europe? Like, I don't understand, you know, liquefied natural gas is in great demand by our allies. Why would you do that? Because you understand, we just talked about Ukraine. You understand you're fueling Vladimir Putin's war machine because they got to get their gas from him, you know. And he looks at me stunned with this, and he said, I didn't do that. And I said, Mr. President, you did. It was an executive order like, you know, 3 weeks ago. And he goes, no, I didn't do that. And he's arguing with me. I said, Mr. President, respectfully, could I go out here and ask your secretary to print it out? We'll read it together. You definitely did that. And he goes, oh, you talk about natural gas. Yes, sir. He said, no, you misunderstand. He said, what I did is I signed this thing we're gonna conduct a study on the effects of LNG. I said, no, you're not, sir. You paused it. I know. I have the terminal, the export terminals in my state. I talked to those people this morning. This is doing massive damage to our economy, national security. It occurred to me, Barry, He was not lying to me. He genuinely did not know what he had signed. And I walked out of that meeting with fear and loathing because I thought, we're in serious trouble. Who is running the country? Like, I don't know who put the paper in front of him, but he didn't know.
Wow.
Great. What was the talk show? Who was he talking to?
That was Barry Weiss, the former New York Times reporter.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, we can no longer be accused of speculating.
Right.
That's the Speaker of the House. So what we all thought and believed was going on, now we have evidence and confirmation.
So, yeah, we talked, I think, yesterday a little bit about majority of the executive orders and documents that Joe Biden signed were actually signed by what's called an auto pen. Do you remember this conversation? It's an actual physical machine where you put a pen in a machine that holds it to the paper, and then the computer actually traces the signature of the person, and Joe Biden in this case. And you could look because they're identical. You could, like a mirror image of each other. No one signs their name that identically twice. So it's definitely, they know which ones are by the auto pen. And almost all of the documents that were signed during his
executive order documents. Yeah.
Well, bills? I don't know. Sometimes, if he has a signing ceremony in the White House and hands out pens, obviously he's signing that.
Sure.
Right. Can you imagine Speaker Johnson leaving the White House going, I'm number three in line to be president, and I don't even know what's going on. Mm-hmm. I mean, I do and I don't. You know, I know that the president is incapacitated, basically, from a mental standpoint. And what do we do about it? You know what? Three things about this. I don't want to revisit this too long because we've talked about it a lot. The Democrats deserve to be in the minority right now and to not be in the White House for this reason alone. They put our country at risk by knowingly having a fellow in the White House in charge who was mentally compromised, did not know what was going on, had to be shuffled around. And, of course, the whole world saw that in June of 2024 at the debate when he was staring off into space. And we were being gaslighted by the Democrats and the media and the White House. Now, we were being gaslighted, but guess what? We all knew what was going on here. It was everything I just described. You remember that photograph of him over there in Italy, I think it was? And you got these four or five European leaders up there, and Biden's just wandering off out into the field.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then Karine Jean-Pierre says, oh, that's normal. He just trying to point out something over there.
The debate was one more blow in the media's
lack of credibility.
Credibility.
Well, then he was after the whole world saw what was going on at the debate. Then he was pressured by Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and others to say he wasn't going to run.
That's right.
And then I'm thinking, well, wait a minute.
They're the one. Yeah.
You're not going to run because you're incapable of handling it. But the Democrats going to leave you for seven more months while the world's on fire? That's doesn't give you any comfort at all. So I'm just the Democrats. I don't know who's in charge of their party now, but whoever the power brokers are, and maybe there's a power vacuum there. I don't know right now, but they don't get me wrong. I'm glad they lost. Okay, right. Because President Trump and the conservatives are doing great things for our country right now. So I'm glad they lost, but I'm just saying, if you don't care who won or lost and you want to look at what happened, the Democrats would have had a much better chance to keep the White House and maybe keep the Congress had Biden stepped down along the way, maybe at the midterm, and maybe they couldn't make him. Maybe Jill Biden was blocking them. And she went because she was probably the most power hungry person in the world, knowing she sees her husband all day, every day, and she knows what's going on. And she's like weekend at Bernie's.
Yeah, no, propping them up. Yeah.
Prop Joe up today. Give him some drugs or something. But we got to stay in the White House. I'm Joe Biden. I want to have access all these perks. But anyway, they would have done better, politically speaking, in terms of having a chance, had they gone through a nomination process.
That's right.
And not just coronating Kamala Harris, which everybody knew was a high risk at losing. I don't know if they could have come up with anybody better, Steve,
not a very deep bench.
Not a very deep bench. But I think, to me personally, that governor of Pennsylvania or the governor even of Michigan would have had a better chance to.
Well, the governor of Pennsylvania was Jewish, and we know what's happening on the campuses and what the Democrat Party.
Yeah, but he would have had a better chance of beating Trump than she did.
Yeah.
Kamala Harris.
For one thing, you would have been able to some extent, run away from the Biden economy.
Yes.
You could have run away from it as a Democrat,
We're going to change these things.
We're going to change these things. But if you're going to stick with Kamala Harris, and in the way it was done, was not Democratic, democratically selected, now you're stuck with the last 4 years. And that's a great part of what sunk the Democratic Party. You would have made the election about Donald Trump if you have Shapiro or somebody else.
Right, that's right.
As opposed to making it about the last 4 years under Biden.
And Kamala Harris, with all, should I say due respect? Listen, I don't know her. Maybe
she's totally different than when she appears.
She may be a really nice person just one-on-one with folks. I mean, I don't know her. I'm just saying, we all knew she was not fit to be president whatsoever.
3-5, not even close. Meal.
She was a DEI hire. Yeah. What'd you say?
3-5, three fries short of a Happy Meal.
Well, listen, she was elected senator of California, and she was elected statewide as attorney general. So she did have some background of success in politics.
But she ran in 2016 and she was the first to drop out of about 18.
Yes. Woefully unqualified intellectually and her inability to articulate anything.
Or in debate.
She is a terrible candidate. And President Obama knew this. He tried to get the Democrats to steer away from coordinating her behind the scenes, but he knew she had a good chance she would lose. So, but the problem is they were stuck. Well, they were stuck with her because she was a woman of color. And you can't say, no, you can't run because then she would have said, well, you're not letting me run because I'm a woman of color.
Therefore, you're racist.
They would have said, no, we're not letting you run because you're going to lose because you're a terrible candidate. No, you're not letting me run because I'm – you see what I'm saying? But she was originally a DEI hire.
That's right.
Because Biden
– made it specific.
Yeah, he said you have to be these things or you won't be my running mate.
I am going to choose a black woman to be my running mate.
Right.
And Democrats, he's not even a biologist. I don't know.
I don't know how you know.
I was right there.
The Democrats seem to be unusually wed to this next man or woman up code ever since Obama. So they had to know that Hillary Clinton wasn't real. I mean, she was articulate, yes. She had all the degrees and everything, but her likability, her favorables were
when you're talking about when she ran in 2016.
When she ran in 2016.
She at least was smart.
Well, yeah, but
saying is
Hillary Clinton, yeah.
Yeah. So her favorability ratings were in the toilet, if I can quote Archie Bunker.
She just wasn't very likable.
But she wasn't likable, but she at least was very politically astute.
But she was the next woman up. She was the next woman up. Remember, they bypassed Bernie Sanders, and everybody thought that that he might have been the next person up. But then Kamala, Joe Biden was the next person up, and then Kamala. They just can't break the chain.
Well, anyway, to the original story, this is the Speaker of the House saying on the record his horror story of the person who's supposedly in charge of the most powerful nation on earth not being in charge of the most powerful nation on earth.
For how many months did that go on?
Yes.
Next story, Steve.
All right.
We got the cat story, Steve.
We're
about out of time here.
Yeah, we can do the
maybe do two. I don't care. But
no, well, let me start here.
Cat story.
The new owner of a Tesla is Donald Trump. He can't drive it, but he owns it now.
Secret Service won't let him drive, probably.
That's correct.
Right.
But he in solidarity with Elon Musk, he decided to buy a Tesla. Not that Elon needs the money, and not that
to personally buy one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this was him at the White House. He was talking to his to the press who's there, and I think you're going to hear Peter Doocy talking. Cut nine.
Hello, President Trump. Are you looking to buy or lease today?
Well, I'm going
to
buy, and I'm going to buy because number one, it's a great product, as good as it gets, and number two, because this man has devoted his energy and his life to doing this, and I think he's been treated very unfairly by a very small group of people. And I just want people to know that you can't be penalized for being a patriot. And he's a great patriot.
There is
good for him.
Now, there is now
good
Trump.
For him.
There is now Elon derangement syndrome. It's a thing.
Yes.
Elon Musk is only, to me, pointing out government waste and fraud and abuse. Who can be against that? I don't understand.
The entirety of the Democratic Party and liberals in Hollywood.
But the question would be why?
Yes.
You know?
Why indeed?
I don't think they have good motives.
No. As we said, we might have talked about this in our story meeting. To me, it is because the left wants the administrative state.
Yes.
They deep down hate the Constitution because the Constitution wants separation of powers, whereas the left wants aggregation of powers.
Yes.
And Elon Musk, who is associated with Donald Trump, so two strikes against him, is trying to expose the corruption of the administrative state, and that's why the left is going after.
Good for Elon Musk, yep. And I hope he stays with it, and I'm glad President Trump is sticking with him because a wedge, I'm sure, is trying to be driven between the two, and President Trump yesterday symbolically said, I'm standing and I appreciate what Elon Musk is doing for our country, and I'm going to buy a Tesla just to prove it.
Right.
Yeah, to further prove it. And we got a really feel-good story.
Yeah, we do. Catherine Kiefer lost her house in the Palisades fire, which isn't good. She thought she lost her cat as well. The cat's name was Aggie, the Maine Coon. They're very loving cats. And so she had been mourning this, but all of a sudden, guess who shows up? Aggie shows up. Aggie had been hanging out somewhere in the ashes, I guess. She was near starvation, but they got her in time and took her to the vet. And now cat mom and cat are reunited.
Because cats, in a lot of ways, are different than dogs. Dogs are going to hang close to their owners. But when things are like fire and that kind of thing, sometimes cats will leave and hide just for their own self-preservation. Isn't that what happened? The cat took off, and she thought that it perished as the fire swept through.
Yeah.
But apparently the cat...
The whole nine lives were taken up on that. But.
Yeah. That's a great story. Yeah. And also, I was reading a story earlier about a week ago about a dog that traveled like 50 miles to get back to its owner after the owner got separated from the dog.
I love those kind of stories.
Yeah. The dogs just have a sense of direction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a movie I used to watch with my little kids called Homeward Bound. It was about
It was two dogs and a cat.
Yeah.
Two dogs and a cat.
They got lost and they found their way back.
And they
you know what was amazing about that? They knew English.
I know.
They
could
speak.
They talked to one another.
One of them was Michael J. Fox.
Yeah.
The voice, I think.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening to this program, Today's Issues. We invite you to keep listening throughout the day to American Family Radio. And we'll be back here tomorrow at 10:05 Central Time for more of Today's Issues.